Welcome to another episode of the Gonzo Chronicles. This is your host, Cyrus Alderwood, and today I'm actually incredibly excited because I've been wanting to have a filmmaker on the show for a while, and I stumbled onto one on Facebook who has got an incredible resume. Jennifer Nangle, independent filmmaker, award-winning independent filmmaker. How the hell are you doing?
I am great. Thank you for having me, and what an introduction.
Well, you are an award-winning winning filmmaker.
That is true.
And I was, before we start recording, I was just saying, you know, you have just one hell of a resume. I was just looking through your website and your demo reels and then what you've put up on YouTube. Just some really incredible work. And it's the month of Halloween. And God, I love creepy stuff. So what better time, like 2 days before a creepy day, than we talk about some of your excellent horror film work?
Oh, yeah, let's do it. Thank you.
just to kind of kick off, though, Jennifer, I read that you started acting at the age of 10.
Yes.
And yeah. I guess you grew up in Boston. Tell us a little bit about what it was like to start out at such a young age getting into acting, and how did that happen?
Sure, yeah. So basically, I grew up, singing in recitals, like through kindergarten, nursery school. I did dance, like, as soon as I could walk. But I never really thought about doing theater or being introduced to theater until I saw some family friends that were in The Sound of Music, and they were younger than I was, and they were, you know, hitting their marks on stage and remembering dance moves and remembering all their songs and lines, and I was just so mesmerized by the whole process that I was like, I want to do that. So after the show, I told my mom, I want to do it. And so she did the best that she could to get me involved in anything and everything that we could, participate in. So I started off in musical theater real young, and I grew up in a small town called Danvers, which is north of Boston. It's right near Salem. So I grew up super creepy with the Salem witch trials and a lot of history and historical stuff. So it's kind of always been in my blood to kind of do entertainment in a horrific way.
so yeah, you kind of come by it honest growing up near Salem. That's,
yeah,
I didn't know that. I knew it was near Boston, cause I'd read that you'd grown up near Boston. Now, yeah. So you were 10 years old and you were getting into that, and eventually you went from Boston, when did you make your way out to LA to actually jump into what you're doing now?
So I went to college in Niagara Falls, New York, near Buffalo, New York. So I was out there for about 6 years with college, and then I did some Shakespeare in the Park and theater there. And then after that, I moved out to LA.
So what made you, was there like a turning point, like when you got into independent filmmaking? What transitioned you in from acting into actually getting to that role?
So when I came out to LA, I, you know, had superstars in my eyes. I was like, this is going to be easy. I'm going to be on TV in a matter of weeks. You just have to like know the right people and like be in really good shape and like whatever, right? Oh, Lordy, no. No, reality really struck, because you look around and you're like, everybody's beautiful. Everybody's in shape. Everybody could be famous. So how does this work, you know? So I ended up taking a Meisner technique class, which is kind of like a method way of acting. So I studied that for 2 years. And then after I got out of there, I graduated there, I was like, all right, now what? What do we do? Oh, we got to find an agent. Well, finding an agent was not the easiest process for me. And then it was like, okay, well, you find an agent, and then you like wait for an audition, and then you wait for an audition, and then you wait for an audition. You get one audition, you go out for that audition. There's like 65 million people there, and you don't book it. And then you wait a couple more months, and hopefully you get an audition. Like, I was never that lucky person that like things were just really rolling for me. So I was like, wow, what am I going to do? Like, I want to act. I want to prove to people that I can do this, that I'm good, that I've studied, and I've pretty much dedicated my whole life to doing this. Like, what can I do? And so a friend of mine introduced me to self-producing. So we worked on a web series called Guides, which is based off the Ancient Alien theory.
Yeah, okay.
And And so I learned the whole process from, you know, writing a script idea of like web series based to, you know, finding locations, casting, how to shoot stuff, cameras. Like I learned everything. I didn't go to film school because I went to musical theater. Like I got theater studies degree. So this whole filmmaking process was just like eye-opening and really trying to figure it out, like editing, how you sync footage. You know, it was such a great learning experience that I took everything that I learned and then started just kind of playing on my own. So I started, you know, writing, and I started to put stuff into production, and then I started editing. So yeah, it was really working on Guides, the web series, that kind of made me move into filmmaking because I wanted to act.
Yeah. You know, it's, you talk about that journey, and I've been fortunate that I've met a lot of people over the years through just different things I do with nonprofits and writing novels and things like that. And I've made friends with, a couple, three different people that are in the business out there. And one of them, and I'll drop his name, he's a friend of mine, Neely Lawson. He actually did an independent film some years ago and then came back to East Tennessee to showcase it because he filmed it back here. And he still lives in L.A., him and his wife, and they have a son out there. But he actually was one of the editors. He worked for NBC Universal for a while out there and worked on – there was a really big show some years back called Lost.
And, oh, yeah.
Great show.
Huge fan of Lost.
So he was one of the people who did the editing work and things like that with NBC Universal. And he's no longer with them, but he got out of that and then did some independent filmmaking and still does some, you know, some work there, you know, off and on. And then he has a cousin that left from here where I'm at, and, you know, I'm in the southwestern corner of the Commonwealth of Virginia, so I'm near the Tennessee border. And Neely actually went to film school, like, so he studied over at UT in Knoxville. But his cousin went out there chasing the dream too, and he was a really phenomenal actor. But like you said, when you go to these auditions, it's so hard to just get recognized, and you put so much heart and soul into what you do.
Yeah.
And another friend of mine that lives out in LA now, she's been around the area there for quite a while. And, she gets calls back a lot for like voiceovers and voice auditions and things like that. And it's so hard. I didn't realize how much work, like not just heart and soul people put in, but the filmmaking, the editing, you talk about the writing, the entire process. I didn't realize until I learned it from them talking about it, just, yeah, you know, sitting around having drinks and listening, like, that is exhausting mentally and emotionally. And when I was reading that, you know, you've done, you know, you said film, web, stage, but you were nominated for Best Actress in an independent horror movie back in 2016 for your role in Demonic Attachment. And as I was reading that, I noticed that you acted, wrote, and produced. And, you know, after, you know, talking to, you know, my friends out there in the business, how damn hard is it to wear all those hats and do all of that? You know, it's pretty daunting, I would imagine.
It's definitely not something that I choose, nor is it something that I want to do. But to do what I want to do and to play the characters that I want to play and to tell the stories that I want to tell, I unfortunately have to do all of it. And it's really hard. So you have to surround yourself with the right people, the people that you can rely on, the people that you know are going to give you those 5 minutes to prepare before you're about to shoot, so you can get into characters, you can get your emotional prep, so you can be, you know, centered and focused and there. Because if you can't do that, like jumping in and out of, you know, different positions, like sometimes I'll be on set and I have like a really serious, you know, scene I have to do, but like I'm getting phone calls that the person that's delivering lunch can't find our location. So I have to stop what we're doing. I mean, this happened while we were shooting the Malvolio Halloween special. I have to stop what we're doing, take a phone call, kind of direct somebody to find like where we're at, and then jump right back into it. So for me, it's been a lot of practice to jump around from position to position. But in the beginning, it was definitely a rude awakening. And it is very, very exhausting. Like, starting, you know, this quarantine season, I, like many people, have, you know, started therapy. And I work with a therapist who works with a lot of artists, which is such a blessing, because I kind of shared with her one day, you know, like, I was like, oh, I, you know, I shot only a couple of hours the day before, but today I'm like exhausted. And she's like, well, yeah, you exerted yourself. You were like being creative. So when you are creative, you're going to, you know, really tire out. So you need to have a day where you can really rejuvenate and, you know, have some me time. So it was a blessing to kind of to discover that I wasn't weird or that I wasn't having enough vitamins or something, like, yeah. You know, that it just happens to all of creative people that we just really push the limits.
Do you find it more like exhausting to be doing the acting process or the writing process? Is there much, because you're being very creative with your writing as well? Hey, I think we froze. Yeah, I have a poor network connection, so hang loose here. We'll have her back. Hey there. Can you hear me?
Oh, there you are.
Yeah, here I am. Sorry about that. We'll keep recording through this too, but yeah, which seems to be more exhausting, like the acting or the writing process, or is it the same?
For me, it would be the acting, because it's your full being. You know, it's your body is your instrument, and everything is being used. Whereas when you're writing, it's just kind of like, for me, it's thinking, discovering, you know, plunking things out. But it's the acting part. Like when I was going through Meisner technique, like at one point I was like profusely sweating. I was kind of out of breath. We were doing like this crazy scene and my teacher stopped and she's like, you tired? I'm like, yeah, I'm exhausted. And she's like, well, being an actor is like being doing an Olympian sport. You're using your whole being to portray and tell a story. So I would definitely say the acting.
For me. Okay. Yeah. Cause I would have to say it's mentally exhausting and emotionally exhausting. As well.
And physically, yeah. Depending on what you're doing. Yeah.
Now, since you did film, web, and stage, do you have a preference on which of those to work in?
I would love to just be consistent in film. Like before, like when I was going through college, I kind of fell out of love with musical theater and stage. If I had an opportunity to go back, I totally would do it. But my focus was television. But now I'm like, nah, I want to do film. Film is like my thing.
Yeah. So I want to bring up another I found this absolutely fascinating. There were contests for a 15-second short film.
Yes.
And I'm thinking, you know, as a writer, like, I'm trying to, like, give a description. I mean, 15 seconds, what the hell is that? And I thought, well, how do you tell a story in 15 seconds? And you filmed what's called Case 311. And you were recognized as one of the top three emerging female filmmakers off of that. Tell us a little bit about what 311 was and what that was like filming that.
Yeah, so I'm obsessed with mental asylums. I'm obsessed because I grew up down the street from Danvers State Mental Asylum, and that place was just always so fascinating to me. And Danvers State is in the horror movie Session 9, if you ever want to
I've seen it.
Oh, okay, great, yeah. Great. So you know what I'm talking about. Yeah. Obsessed with that place. And so when I saw that there was this contest, I was like, well, I want to do it, you know, like I can tell a story in 15 seconds. It is not as easy as you think. But basically, I did Case 311. My boyfriend and I worked on it together, and it was just kind of like a mental patient that, you know, she's sitting there struggling, and then you kind of see a demon behind her, and then the demon vanishes, and then you realize that she's just pretty much talking to herself and that there are demons around her.
Oh, I know. But when the camera panned back, I'm like, hey, the demon is you. That was where it got me, like 15 seconds. I'm like, oh, I get it. That's creepy. That's creepy as hell right there. But so that one's on YouTube. I think people can see that there. And there was another one that you did that was not scary, but it was the coat room.
Oh yeah, it was like more of a dramatic piece. Mm-hmm. Yes.
Mm-hmm. And that kind of fits in with what you were talking about earlier about all the actors, like even if you get 2 minutes or 1 minute or whatever, trying to fill it with emotion.
Yes.
And that was really kind of telling about, you know, the acting chops of everybody there. So when you think independent film, you know, from a lot of people think when you go see an independent film or you go rent something that's like B movie, you get like shitty acting, blah 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 blah. And I guess and a lot of maybe you can, but I was watching that, and it was probably about, what, a 12-minute, 14-minute clip of that, and I was like, wow, all these people are like, they're there, they're acting. They're not, this is not some cheap production. It's like, that was really good stuff. And you can tell a lot about the crew, how they're, if you're wearing all those hats, you have to have some really dedicated people showing up working for you, because you probably, I imagine, run a fairly tight ship, just from what I've seen with your film.
Yeah, Katie White, who wrote and directed that piece, she's tough. She's hard and she's tough, and she only accepts 100%. So everybody was on their A game, and if we weren't, she called you out on it, and then you worked even harder and then harder. And then what was most difficult about that was that we were just in one location, so it was really hard to kind of play up the location, you know, switch different angles and stuff to make it interesting every single time when we're in this tiny little bedroom. And the director of photography definitely nailed it on that. Yeah, so that was a great experience.
I was sitting there like, man, I hope her and her sister are really drinking wine. I hope they're pounding booze, you know, because that was like one of those, I could see my two sisters having a discussion like that away from everybody else. I'm like, that's right on. So if that's a tight ship, then you definitely pat her on the back, because that showed in that. Now, I did want to bring up another one that you recorded, Spirit Board. Tell us a little bit about that, and I have a follow-up question about that.
Sure, yeah. So I don't remember what year that was. Was it like 2015, 2016, or something like that? Mark Duplass, this was a big video that was going around. Mark Duplass, one of the Duplass brothers, was like, you should be making a short film on the weekends with your friends. You should be putting out content. You should be, you know, constantly working on your craft. And it like struck me hard. I was like, yes, absolutely. What do I have to do? So, yeah, I think in the video he says, like, gather your friends together, use whatever location you have, you know, come up with an idea, just shoot it and put it out there. So Spirit Board was kind of like testing the waters. It was the first one that we did. I knew I had my apartment. I knew I had a bunch of friends that wanted to act. I knew a friend that wanted to, you know, dabble into cinematography. And so we just kind of created the short film and shot it, I believe, in like 6 hours. And I just kind of came up with that idea of horror and let's communicate with our dead mother.
I was like, man, okay, I wonder how many people have tried. But here's what I wanted to follow up with. All right, so now that I know that you're from near Salem, I mean, what kind of real world experience do you have with Ouija boards?
I obviously dabbled when I was younger. Did we have some what I think were like real moments? Yes, absolutely. But I've never talked to anybody that I've known, nor have I ever experienced anything like really demonic or anything like that. After doing a bunch of research, you know, growing up, watching some ghost adventures, kind of learning about what like the Ouija boards are and stuff, I'm very, very cautious now. I do kind of bring them into Malvolia, you know, just because it is scary.
Yeah.
But yeah, we definitely say, you know, we're here, we come in peace, and we definitely close out the sessions every time we're done with it. Yeah.
Yeah, that creeped me out. I mean, even to this day, I never really thought about it when I watched The Exorcist the first time, that's how that girl, you know, the girl was possessed, was from Captain Howdy. Until years later, I'm like, wait a minute, she was playing with a Ouija board. It took me to see this movie, and you'll probably know this one. It's called Witchboard, and it had Tawny Katane in it. You remember the girl from the Whitesnake videos?
Yes.
She was in that, and for whatever reason, that movie scared the hell out of me. I had a hard time sleeping for like a week after watching that, and it's not overly scary. Like when I watch it now, it's like, what the hell was I so afraid of? But like now it's to this day, it's like every time I see a movie about a Ouija board, it like sends a little chill up my spine.
Absolutely. Because if you really think about what you're doing, it's pretty messed up. And how this is like a board game that you can buy like at Target.
It's like 5-year-old kids talk to dead grandmas.
Right? It's crazy.
That is crazy. Now we've all heard of like, you know, cursed films like Poltergeist was cursed. And, well, actually I was just watching the other day, Eli Roth. They had one of these shows about, you know, cursed films. Now, anything you've experienced with any of your filmmaking that's kind of made you kind of scratch your head and think, what?
No, unfortunately.
Unfortunately? Oh, but yeah, you hear about on these big Hollywood sets, but it's like it has to happen on the independent sets too.
Actually, I take that back. 2 years ago, we shot at an abandoned animal hospital, which is in Riverside, California. Okay. And I shot The Hunt there, and we shot the Malvolia Halloween Special Season 2 there. And we were told really nothing about it, but I had known people that had filmed in there prior, and they're like, this place is haunted, blah, 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 you know. And I ended up being there alone for a little bit because the director and DP and actress went off to film something. So I was just kind of chilling there by myself. And I kind of did taunt a little bit, like, hey, is anybody here? Like, what's going on? I don't feel anything, blah, 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 blah. And I did feel pretty weird the rest of the day. And there are some things that I'm not going to get into it because it is pretty personal, but I did feel like I got some backlash for maybe taunting or something, but I don't know. Was it in my head? I don't know. Did it really happen? I don't know. But
I don't know. It's like you mentioned those ghost hunting shows. I'll watch them on occasion. I'm like, God, be careful what you're looking for. You might find it, you know?
Exactly.
Do you really want to find that?
Find it. Yep.
Just, mm-hmm. But so I wanted to also ask, like, when you got into film, was there a particular movie or film or work from somebody that you saw that set you on to the path of making independent films?
No. I mean, I've always been a huge fan of Alfred Hitchcock and Psycho, and I've always admired indie filmmaking, but there isn't, like, a specific person that or a specific movie that I was like, oh, I want to do that, I want to make that. For me, it was always because I don't normally get cast in a lot of stuff. So, you know, as an actor, I want to let my creative juices out. And so I need to personally create the characters for myself to play. And so that's what filmmaking for me is.
Do you think maybe not having that kind of like role model or mentor or whatever that you saw kind of helps keep your work kind of more unique and kind of pure, I guess, in a way?
I never really thought of it that way, but yes, probably. I don't go out and copy anybody. There isn't like a certain tone that I want. I just kind of go with where the project like feels to go.
Okay.
So yeah, probably. It probably gives me a unique voice. Yes.
All right. Now, so like in Coat Room, just got to jump back to that. You were the winner of the Hollywood and Vine film festival back in 2014 for that. So that was another film that you wanted to win. Seems like every one you've done, you're getting some sort of like some chops or some or actual awards for it.
I've been really fortunate to be recognized pretty much somewhere for something. And I'm very thankful and very lucky for that because a lot of times, a lot of people, like a lot of projects that I've done, you know, you submit to like 50 film festivals, you might get into two, and just even being acknowledged by one is an ultimate compliment. So yes, I'm very thankful for that.
Yeah. I was just like, when I told you, I was reading your website earlier. I was like, damn, everything she's done. It's like, you know, you're getting a pat on the back from somebody or winning like a placing in something. And it was even for a 15-second film, I was wondering, just how do you do a 15-second? Then I learned, and then I'm like, wow, okay. Yeah, that takes vision to do that.
I seem to always kind of talk about things that people can relate to, and so I think that's why people like my projects. But that's what I think.
All right, I have a couple of fun questions, and then I've got a really serious one that one of our listeners wanted me to ask you. But you're a big horror fan. Like, you're a comedy fan, too, I found out as well, right?
I do like the comedy. If I were a better writer, I'd love to do some comedy, but I'm not. So that's why I usually stick to the horror side.
Now, if you could actually be in a comedy movie, like any of your favorite comedies, you can insert yourself into it. Do you have one in mind?
Yes. I would hands down be in Clue. I think Clue is the most fun movie ever, and I loved the board game growing up.
That is what that is a great movie, and the, and the guy at the very end, the line that he dropped. Yeah. I'm gonna go home and make love to my wife. And I think the whole time everybody thought he was gay, right? It's like, what? Yes. Like, okay. But no, that was an amazing movie. That was a really good movie. But all right, fun question. All right. Top five horror films you cannot live without.
Okay. Psycho. Session 9. The Ruins. I love The Ruins. Two more. Because I usually get top three. Those are hands down my top three.
Well, your name. Well, you got a couple of classics in there, which is really. I didn't see Psycho coming, but I can see that.
No, you didn't? No. Oh, yeah. I love Psycho. Like, I could watch that every day, all day, endlessly. Like, I just learned that he, you know, did like the mirroring type stuff while he was shooting it, especially with Marion and Norman and how they mirror one another. And how, like, there's reflections of them in, like, certain scenes. Oh, my God, it's just fascinating. There's just so much to that film that you can just dissect and dissect and dissect and dissect, and you just keep learning more. So I would say Friday the 13th, the original.
Okay.
And then last one. Lord, what would it be? You know, like when you get asked those questions and you're like, oh, I don't know what it is. And then like an hour later, I'll be like, I know which one I would have picked.
Tough. There's so many great films out there that are just like either classics or just still resonate, like Friday 13th or Nightmare on Elm Street to this day.
Yeah.
Still resonates.
I would say the fifth one would be Insidious. And that would be the first one. I don't know what they call it, chapter one or the first Insidious.
Actually, I just watched that last night.
Yeah.
That was on. Now, speaking of like kind of jumping back in here and you know, as a filmmaker and you see remakes like Nightmare on Elm Street remake, what do you think of remakes? And is there, like, did they do a pretty good job, do you think, on the second one? Like the remake of Nightmare?
No, I don't.
I hear that a lot. I don't think they did either, and I have reasons why. But what? How come you don't think it was so good?
The remakes to me always feel like they're missing that hunger. You know, like you can tell in Halloween how hungry they were. You can tell, you know, in Saw, the first Saw, how hungry they were, you know? And then the more that they make or when they try to remake them, that authenticity, that hunger is gone. It's just, and like, you know, a lot that's been coming up, because I always bring up Psycho, is the remake of Psycho, the 1998. And it wasn't a remake. It was shot for shot, redone Psycho. Why? What was the point?
Why mess with perfection?
Yes. You know? And what were you trying to prove?
I'm really hoping no one does a remake of The Exorcist, because how do you top that?
Yeah.
Now, as far as, like Nightmare, the thing with me on Nightmare was like, I really love the first three. Actually, I like all of them. I'm not going to say I don't. I own the whole collection. But once you got past three, it kind of got cheesy and funny. But I think we were probably at a point in the culture we were kind of wearing thin on that genre for a period of time. Yeah. And at that point, they were just effing around, trying to have fun with it. And I get that. But as far as the remake, I mean, the acting was good in the remake. Didn't have a problem with any of that stuff. Or even the way the film was made. I thought it was filmed really well. But the character of Freddy Krueger himself, I mean, it's hard to replace the
Robert original. England.
Yeah, Robert England. Yeah. I was drawing a blank there. I don't know why, but it's hard to replace him. But even if, I mean, so that wasn't necessarily a thing. But like the story itself, they deviated and told way too much about Freddy Krueger, because part of the original was like that fear of the unknown. Like, why is this son of a bitch still back here? I know he hates our parents. They did something to him. They burned him alive. But what's the whole story? And when you tell the whole story, it kind of takes away that fear of the unknown, that luster. Like,
yeah,
it's like the original Halloween movie. Like you said, the hunger, you can see that. to me, that was so good, not because it wasn't bloody or gory or anything like that. It was that fear of the unknown. And the fact that when you take a look at that little town, I mean, it was like Eisenhower's America at the time, you know, it's like some small little town, perfect little something out of the 50s, and how something that evil can happen. And
yeah,
and that fear of the unknown. I think that's what hits it. And like with that 15-second film you did, when I was watching that, when you panned back, and I'm just seeing you talk to like something that went out. I knew you were talking to a ghost or a demon or something. But when you panned it back and it was you, I'm like, oh shit! Like, yeah, I mean that fear of the unknown, like that kind of hit me in a different way. I'm like, wow, that's pretty powerful. And you had that vision to do that in 15 freaking seconds. I wouldn't have thought of that, but
thank you.
Yeah, but that's pretty incredible to do that. So. Five movies you can't lose. Are you a fan of classic horror films?
Yeah.
Like the old Bela Lugosi, even Vincent Price type things?
I mean, I'll definitely watch them. Like The Bride of Frankenstein and stuff. I'll watch them, but it's not like I need to see them or have to have them. I love the characters, though, for sure.
Hey, if you ask me, Monster Squad's still a great film.
I was gonna say, I'd rather watch Monster Squad than.
Wolfman has nards. Like that line stuck out to me from when I was a kid. Now, I did get a kind of a serious question. You were talking about you're sitting on the awards. Now, before I get into this question, a listener asked. You recently sat on a panel, like an all women's panel, talking about women in horror. What was that like? What was the discussion like there?
I've actually done that now a couple times. And it's always a really interesting process, the questions that they ask you. And it's always, a lot of times the question will always be brought up like, you know, how are you treated in the industry? Or, you know, if you could do something different, like what would you do? Or how do you feel like, you know, we're going into the future, like what is the women's side and the storytelling of women looking like for you in the future? Those always seem to be like the same kind of questions that you get over and over again. And like, I hate to be this person, but I always bring up the Me Too movement during that time, because that's a really big deal. Like, yeah, we see it in Hollywood. We see it with a lot of people with a lot of money, but what a lot of people don't realize is that it's happening in the indie circuit too. It happens all the time. I can't tell you how many times I've gone for a meeting with a director and it's turned into a date. And I'm like, wait, what? I thought we were talking about a movie in a part. Like, why?
Yeah.
What's going on? You know, and I've been apologized by many directors and people I've been on set with that, you know, were like, oh, I'm sorry if I've crossed the line or anything like that. So I am appreciative of the Me Too movement because it kind of opened up a lot of people's eyes. And, I'm really hoping that things are moving in a better, more positive direction in the indie circuit, you know, as opposed to Hollywood A-list.
Yeah. Because when that was, there's so many bombshells that dropped with Weinstein and it's still resonating. And honestly, it needs to resonate more into corporate America because you see it a lot there too. The only time you really see it in the news is if it's something high profile. Like a high profile news anchor or you know, in Hollywood with Weinstein and then of course the whole Epstein and you know, and honestly and
now the NXIVM cult stuff.
Oh my god, yeah.
Yeah.
How did that go on for so long? When you see things like that, I'll throw my optimism in here. I think when people are kind of waking up to the things that they see around them now, We have a very, probably the best opportunity in a long time, regardless of what people think of like our culture right now, where we're at and economically, politically, but we have such an opportunity to just average everyday people to seize the reins and change the culture. Mm-hmm. And we have an opportunity for a much better world. And it's just ours to take. And, you know, one person at a time looking in the mirror and saying, hey, you know, this, from a guy's perspective, even a lot of times in my life, I've not recognized what those things were. I have two older sisters, and as they get older and I have nieces and I see some of the things they go through, it's like, holy shit, you know, I hope I wasn't a dick like that, you know, 20 years ago, but probably I'm sure in many occasions, I probably wasn't, didn't know about it. And
I think what has also happened is with the internet too, is that people feel like they can say whatever they want to say because they're protected by that screen, you know, because like some of the things that I am, that people say to me, as like Malvolia and stuff, I'm like, would you say that to your mama? Would you say that to your sister? Would you even say that to your girlfriend? No, you probably wouldn't. So why are you saying it to me on the internet? Like, you're safe on Instagram or you're safe on Facebook, you know, like it's so such hypocrisy and stuff like that.
Yeah, I've read some of the comments of some people, and I'm like, oh, geez, that's tasteless. You know, there's a local news anchor here, and she's from Pennsylvania, but I live in a small area, so she's, you know, local, and she'll put up Instagram photos, and she'll put up stuff on Facebook, and, you know, she's really smart. Actually, I invited her on the show to talk about the whole topic of fake news and people blaming media. I don't think NBC will let her, because that's probably the affiliate, but I would love to have that discussion. Even playing devil's advocate to some degree, just to make it interesting. But, you know, I asked her, I shot her a quick email. I'm like, every time you post a photo up, I mean, you're at a beautiful park or something, this, that, and the other, and I see out of like 50 comments, 20 are about your legs. One is like, looking great today, beautiful. I'm like, does anybody ever say, hey, great news coverage on this? Or, you know, you wrote that piece on that. I said, does that not just absolutely bug the shit out of you? And she's like, yes. I'm like, because it's like, you do all this great work, and the only thing you get recognized for is, you know, how low cut a shirt is, or you may be playing a role. And I mean, even I imagine what Mistress of the Dark Elvira caught back in the, thank God we didn't have internet. People could just say whatever, but, it's like, you know, can you appreciate the work that people do without noticing that first, you know? It'd be like me writing a great article and somebody said, hey man, that 5 o'clock shadow looks awesome on you today. I'm like, did you not give a shit about what I just wrote? Like some philosophical thing, like, you don't care. Okay. It would be kind of daunting, and which kind of leads me to the question that one of our listeners, Sheree, asked about. In a roundabout sort of way, she was asking, how hard is it for a woman to break into this industry and to be taken seriously, like any kind of glass ceiling type obstacles you've seen in a, you know, an industry that obviously dominated by men, you know, for a long time?
Wow, what an amazing, amazing question. I have always had, like, no fear, if that makes sense. Like, when I want to do something, or if somebody tells me I can't do it, I'm going to do it because I'm going to prove them wrong that I can do it.
Mm-hmm.
So when I approach a project, or I want to be in the industry, or I want to, you know, make a movie and say this and put it in the industry, all that kind of stuff, I have no fear, and I just go straight for it, and I go straight after it. And, you know, I've been really, really fortunate where I have a group of male filmmaker friends that have always been super supportive. They've always believed in everything that I've wanted to say. They've always believed in the stories that I've wanted to tell. So I've always been really, really lucky as far as, you know, being supported on my own projects. But I notice that when I try to venture out and I'm on other people's projects, you know, people that I might not know very well, or I auditioned for them, or a friend of a friend got me into the project or whatever, I don't feel like I am taken very seriously. You know, on one set, I specifically was given direction by a director, and in my mind, it made absolutely no sense. There was no reason for it, and it wasn't even really part of the script. He was just kind of like, yeah, you're going to go over and talk to this character and blah, 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 blah. And I said, that makes no sense. My character would never do that. Like, we don't have any interaction whatsoever. Like, why would I do that? You know, I can't figure it out on my own. Like, I'll always take a note and try and digest it and work it out on my own and try and figure it out. But if I can't do it, I'm going to go to my leader and ask him why. And he told me, you're going to do it because I said so. And I was like, whoa, okay, well, again, and I fought him. I was like, no, my character would not do that. That makes absolutely no sense. The only reason you want me to do that is because aesthetically or shot-wise, it looks good, but it doesn't make any sense whatsoever. You're just going to throw this into your movie because you want it to, like, look a certain way. So I ended up kind of fighting and getting kind of what I wanted. But it's just things like that I feel like if I was a guy, he'd be like, you know what? You're right. Okay, we'll work it out, or something like that. I mean, I could be wrong, but, you know, it's just, yeah, there's a lot of difficulties there, especially like the way you look too. Like, you're always kind of being analyzed in how you look, and what you're going to wear. So being a female in the industry is tough, and sometimes you just have to fight for what you want, and hopefully you'll have people that'll see right through all that kind of stuff, you know, and follow you.
So, well, the first one through the wall always gets a bloody nose. So
yeah.
yeah. I'll keep that in mind. I mean, I've learned that lesson in business the hard way, you know, trying to do some new things. But have you noticed, like, the wheels changing in Hollywood since the whole Me Too movement? Are you seeing more young female filmmakers that are stepping up and trying to do this now, or the attitude of maybe even younger people on set that are coming around and, like, getting away from that old school mentality that the Weinsteins and that type had over the industry for so long?
I think so. I have seen a lot of women step up wanting to tell the stories they want to tell. In fact, recently I was on that woman's panel, and the other director, she seemed younger, but she had, like, a great head on her shoulders. You know, she was also, like, that badass chick that was like, you know, I'm going to do what I want to do, and I'm going to say what I want to say. And I found a team that really supports me, and we did it. And then she was fully celebrated at that festival. She, like, won a couple of awards for her film. And it's really refreshing to see women being celebrated, you know, because for so long we were always the damsel in distress. We were the weak one that couldn't, you know, conquer the villain, or we were always the victim. And now there are different things where we are playing the villain. We are being, you know, the mean girl. We are winning that battle. So, yeah, but to answer your question, I feel like it is changing. It's just kind of changing slowly. And I'm okay with that, because, you know, things that drastic changes always seem to be done slowly for them to kind of stay, if that makes sense.
Yeah. I mean, you know, society changes at the margins, and, you know, but quick changes in anything, you lose an audience, and you probably, yeah, I would say, lose a lot of people interested in working in the business.
Yeah.
If you can have that gradual change. Well, I'm glad to hear that, because that was one thing I was kind of wondering about after I was given that question to ask, because, you know, because here we are in the year with, you know, COVID-19, everything is shut down. Well, I mean, a lot of California is shut down, and LA, I imagine, is pretty locked, yep, up pretty tight. And how has that impacted what you're doing? Are you guys still able to move forward and work on a consistent basis? Or
there is a zombie movie that I was supposed to shoot back in March that's still being pushed.
Okay.
I also am in a role in this upcoming movie called Callback, which, again, was supposed to be shot at, like, around Thanksgiving, and now it's being pushed to 2021. Mm-hmm. So a lot of the bigger budget films that I'm attached to are just really kind of waiting out for it to be a little bit safer, if we even really get to that point,
yeah,
and easier. You know, so, like, if you fly into a location, you don't have to quarantine for 2 weeks, and then you can make, because that's like a whole, and then you shoot for 2 weeks, that's a whole month you got to give up to just go and shoot at a one location type thing. But for me personally, I do everything by myself. I can shoot myself. I record myself. I edit myself. I direct myself. I write myself. So I'm able to do a lot of stuff still alone.
Well, that is awesome.
In
so
quarantine.
Now, do you have any of your films that you still sell, or is this just something that's available for people to watch online?
As far as the, like, quarantine stuff?
Or? No, anything that you've done, any of your work so far.
Oh, I mean, a majority of my stuff that I personally do is on YouTube. I haven't ventured into doing my feature yet. I'm having a couple written by some writers.
Uh-huh.
And so pretty much whatever, which one gets finished first is probably the one that we're going to venture down and tell that story. So everything that I have right now under my belt that I've done is pretty much a short, or it's been for Malvolia, so it's all on the web.
When's the next Malvolia coming out?
So we've had some technical difficulties for the Halloween special, so it should be out tonight. If not, it'll be out tomorrow.
Where can people watch that at? Because I'll be putting out this podcast tonight.
Oh, so awesome. So my YouTube channel is youtube.com/C / Malvolia, the Queen of Screams.
Okay. If you had an opportunity, just drop me that email or that link, and I'll put it on my Gonzo Chronicles Facebook page and on my other Facebook pages. Yeah. And get that out there, and people can check on that, and I'll throw it out on Twitter too. So you have your regular YouTube channel. That's just search Jennifer Nangle.
Yes.
All right, and that's Nangle, right? So people.
Yes. Yep.
Because that's a unique name. That's a unique name.
Angle with an N. Yes.
Now you, JenniferNangle.com. Is that your website?
I have not updated that in a long time, but yes.
No, that's where I saw the coat room.
Oh, okay, yeah.
So I watched it on there. But yeah, I saw you have everything up on your YouTube channel. So, and they can follow you on Facebook, too. If people want to follow you in general to find out what's coming out next, which is the best way to stay up with you?
Usually Facebook and Instagram is the best way.
Okay.
And that's at Queen Malvolia for both, or at Jennifer_Nangle on Instagram, and then just Jennifer Nangle on Facebook.
So what kind of feedback have you been getting on the Malvolia?
That's such a great question to ask. It's an interesting process. And for a while there, I was struggling because I would either hear, a majority of the time, I would not hear anything. Like, I would see a whole bunch of views. Nobody would really comment. Nobody would really share. Nobody would really do anything. And I was like, well, what does that mean? And then I went back to, like, thinking about, you know, acting school and getting notes from a director, and we were always told, you know, if you're not getting any notes, you're doing your job right, so keep doing what you're doing. And so I'm just associating where people probably like it and they're just not taking the time to say that they like it, because, you know, people go on Yelp and only complain. They never really praise anything. So yeah,
I know. I have the same issue with, like, books I write. I always remind people, hey, if you like it, go on Amazon, leave me a ranking and a comment. That's important to me. Or if it sucks, don't tell anybody. And then nobody leaves a comment. I'm like, damn, man. That's like, somebody could, I know I've sold some books. I wish somebody would say something about one of them. But I guess I try to, yeah. People only chime in when they want to bitch about something. So.
Yeah. So what you're doing is right. Just keep that in mind. All right, you know, over the past season, I've had a lot of people chiming in being like, oh, I really enjoyed that episode, or that was a really cool, you know, short film, or I really liked what you did there, or, you know, so I have been getting little things here and there, which has been nice, but
yeah.
Yeah.
Well, that's awesome, though. That's awesome. Yeah, definitely keep up the good work. I was just really kind of, it kind of blew my hair back when I was, and I don't have much of it, but I was watching it, I'm watching your work, and I'm like, wow, this is really impressive stuff, so. You know, definitely, you know, just, you know, do what you're doing. That's just great. So hopefully hopefully we'll see your name on a big budget soon, you know, and directing and doing what you do. You do a great job.
Fingers crossed. Thank you so much.
And you're welcome back anytime to talk the horror in general, because I love that topic. And we talk about anything and everything here on this weird podcast.
Yeah.
From my general rant, I had to let's see how many beers I can drink on the next show. And definitely come back and let us know how things are going, and we'll talk just horror in general and plug your websites and so forth, and get some people over and see if we can get some new eyes on it. That's great.
Yeah, I would love that. And leave a comment. A nice one.
Yeah. If they don't like it, just don't say a damn thing, right?
Just ignore it.
Hey, thanks again for checking us out here on the Gonzo Chronicles. We certainly appreciate it.
Thank you so much for having me.